Yes, that's the early Beatles. On this day in 1964, the Beatles had an unprecedented record of 12 positions on Billboard's Hot 100 chart. We won't play them all, but we should play at least that one, and we did. Let me welcome into the airwaves now John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine and co-author of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. And Brenton Mock joins us. He was in New Orleans, now Washington, D.C., who serves as a reporting fellow on the voting rights for Colonize.com. And Brenton and John, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
It's great to be with you.
Thanks for having me on.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Just a couple of days ago, the Supreme Court made a decision on McCutcheon, which now allows unlimited amounts of money to be spent on campaigns across America. We've seen this court go from the decision in 2010, where Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission brought us this super PACs and money coming into politics, the whittling down. Then we saw Shelby County v. Holder, where the important Voting Rights Act, the heart was torn out of it. And now we have McCutcheon, which really, some people say, just turns the entire political process over to the oligarchs of America. John Nichols, how do you read this?
Well, I think we've gotten a clear signal from the Supreme Court. And we should be cautious about thinking that McCutcheon is, in and of itself, particularly bad. It's a horrible decision, and both badly reasoned and deeply troubling in its certain implications. But it comes as part of a whole. And you referenced Citizens United from 2010. The reality is that since 1976, since back in the period when Americans really were advancing on a host of voting rights and democracy issues, we have seen a steady chipping away by this court of basic protections for democracy. And so McCutcheon has to be seen as part of a whole, and it has to be seen as part of a whole coming from a court that now has an activist majority that is absolutely committed to making it harder for the great mass of Americans to vote while making it easier for a tiny elite to buy its place in our election process and ultimately, especially at local and state levels, to buy elections. So we've really gone full circle, and it's notable that we speak about this on the day that both Dr. King and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. passed away, in obviously 42 and 46 years ago, because both of those men, for all of King's strengths and for all of Powell's complexity, both of those men committed huge portions of their lifetime to the basic notion of expanding democracy, and we respect them for that. Their legacy is literally being dismantled by this court as we speak.
And Brenton Mock, before we jump to the phones here and go to Clarence, our first caller, at 410-319-8888, I mean, tell us if you see a connection between the Voting Rights Act being gutted and these other rulings and how you might see them connected.
Yeah, I see it as an extension of basically the pushback against civil rights in general since those landmark bills were passed in 1964 and 1965. I mean, Chief Justice John Roberts has been chipping away at the Voting Rights Act since he worked under the Reagan administration as an attorney, and he's basically been able to bring that to full evisceration now that he's serving on the U.S. Supreme Court, and I see the same thing happening here with McCutcheon. I mean, basically, this is just a two-pronged attack, by allowing the wealthy to turn politics into an auction rather than an election tilted in the favor of the 1% and the wealthy, and not even the 1%. I mean, we're talking about the 1% of the 1%, the people who really can buy off these elections. And we're doing this during a time of record income inequality. We're doing this at a time when the most vulnerable people in this nation, in terms of poverty and in terms of poor education, in terms of, all of the rights and protections that they need. This is the time when these people need government the most. And yet a decision like this puts an even greater distance between, again, the faces at the bottom of the well and the people that they need to elect to help improve their situation.
I'm going to open the phones here, and I come back with some very specific thoughts about what this might mean, and because I think this is going to, this could very clearly affect not just national races, but fuel groups like ALEC to really kind of make major pushes in states, as they've done in Wisconsin and many other places. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Steiner. I still take my cue from Noam Chomsky on this one.
I know you do.
When you have a nation of laws where grassroots movements and people seek to change and to make the world that they live in like they want it to be, and you have the highest court in the land, which is always in opposition to that, then you are effectively in a no-win situation. And he elaborates on that very well in his documentary, how corporate America, how the Supreme Court has changed and eroded on the basic freedoms in democracy. And he has the Supreme Court sitting right there depicted as the main culprits of this. Thank you, Mr. Stein.
Thank you, Clarence. And I, taking off what Clarence was saying, I guess, John, let me come back to you for a moment, and Brent, I'd like you to comment on this as well. I mean, I guess I'm more deeply worried about what this McCutcheon's decision makes. I mean, when I look at this, John, I'm looking at what happened in your own state of Wisconsin, you know, where ALEC fueled the American Legislative Exchange Council, funneled by a lot of right-wing giant corporate money to tear apart unions that happened in Wisconsin, that makes tax breaks for the wealthy, overthrowing city governments, all this stuff going on. And this is just going to exacerbate that and make that and push that even further. I saw your article in The Nation where you talked about, you know, how towns across Wisconsin are standing up and saying, no, we don't want this. And I think that reflects how the vast majority of Americans don't want this. But the power of money could silence that because they can, well, what they can control in terms of the politicians and the legislatures, whether it's the state governments on up through Congress and the White House.
All right. You put a lot on the table there, and I'm glad I've got my great colleague here to help to answer all those bits and pieces. But let me take a shot at some of it. First off, the biggest mistake that people make is to assume that decisions as regards money in politics are consequential at the presidential level or at the congressional level. They matter a lot in those areas, and there's no question that money in politics has really harmed our political discourse at the federal level. It's made the Republican Party, it's allowed the Republican Party to become dramatically more right-wing. It's made the Democratic Party a very compromised and often ineffectual party as regards especially economic issues. So it's a big deal at the federal level. But where we talk about the idea of actually buying elections, i.e. very, very wealthy people flooding money in and taking control of governmental units, that's at the local level, local government, school boards, into the legislative level in the state, because we have such a lousy media in most of this country that it no longer covers immense amounts of local and state politics. So there you create a situation where if the wealthy are freed to flood their money in without control, they can be the dominant voice, not just the dominant voice in the political debate, but the dominant voice in the whole of the public policy debate, or at least a huge portion of it, because there isn't a sufficient media presence, newspapers, radio, television, also the internet, to offset it. So that's your problem number one. This is an incredibly damaging ruling that it frees up so much more money to flow in so many more directions. Now, the second part is, and I think this is perhaps the most vital thing that I'll say today, to become discouraged by this ruling is madness. It is foolishness, and it is also an option that does not exist, that should not be available. Because the bottom line is this. We have historically seen radical and intense pushback against democracy. It has happened again and again throughout the history of this country. At this point, the most vibrant democracy movement in modern times, certainly since the Civil Rights era, is in play. 16 states have demanded a constitutional amendment to get big money out of politics, to say money isn't speech, corporations aren't people. More than 500, in fact, we're getting close to 600 communities across this country have risen up and said this. Far from being discouraged, what we ought to do is recognize McCutcheon for what it is, a clear indication that we are not going to have a judicial fix for this, and we frankly are not going to have a congressional fix for this. There has to be an overwhelming, from the grassroots up, movement, both in politics and in the streets, to demand that we get this money out of our politics and we get people back into it. I see this as an organizing moment and an energizing moment. And if we take it as anything less, then there is no question that the money will have won.
Thank you, John. We needed that. Brenton Mock.
Yeah, I'm still here. No, I agree with everything you said. And again, I think the same thing goes for the Voting Rights Act. And, you know, when we talk about what was lost when Section 5 was neutralized last summer, you know, a lot of people, I think, kind of jumped to the conclusion that, you know, that this somehow is going to prevent us from, you know, electing the next woman or the next black president. But, you know, as with the money situation, the biggest impact, the hugest pain is going to be is felt at the state level, at the local level. And this is where, you know, again, people in low-income communities and communities of color, this is where government and policy directly affects or most affects their lives. You know, these are the people who pick up the trash. These are the people who determine, you know, what crimes are misdemeanors and what crimes are felonies, whether those crimes will allow you to stop voting when you get out of jail. Across the board. You know, voter ID laws and all of the laws that we right now recognize as an injustice and a violation to civil rights. So, you know, these are state and local laws for the most part. So, yeah, I mean, local politics is everything. And the money-ish situation that just came out of the McCutcheon case, that just compounds problems for people at the local level.
So really what you're both saying is the way to combat the corporate takeover of our country is from the grassroots, is bubbling up from the bottom.
Always.
Yeah, and let me say that it's happening. We have
right.
such a lousy media in America,
right.
aside from your show, Mark, that, and a couple other institutions, aside from the wonderful work that Brenton's doing and others. You know, we have such a lousy media in this country that people don't know that there's a pushback.
Right.
I go around the country. I find people all the time. They're unaware that there is a massive effort to renew voting rights, right up to and including a proposal for a constitutional amendment to protect the right to vote, make sure votes are counted. Certainly all of this constitutional work as regards Citizens United. People keep saying to me, they say, oh, well, we couldn't possibly amend the Constitution. That's impossible. It's never happened. Well, only 27, 28 times. And, you know, the founders amended it 10 times in the first 4 years. People can make things happen, but they have to know that the possibility exists. The civil rights movement of the 1960s became vibrant and powerful enough to shift the course of this country because the media that had not covered the civil rights movement of the 1940s and early 1950s finally started to pay attention. This is a media issue as well as a political issue, and we have to demand that our media today cover grassroots politics as seriously as it does whatever pontification Mitch McConnell or, frankly, Harry Reid is making this week.
Well, one of the things that we're going to try doing here, just to let you all know, we had a series called Rise Up, and we're going to reinstitute that series, which connects people around the country and tell stories about people in their own communities. And with the Real News Network, start some national town meetings so people can connect who are fighting around the same issues and know the other one exists, because we're also separated. We don't know each other exists. And I think that's what you're saying. And that's
exactly right.
Our media, yeah. We can change that.
We have to change
it. We can change that.
Look, you know, I'll tell you, my colleague here will tell you, and some of the Color Lines does incredible work at
yes.
you know, bringing these stories out. But the problem is, if we do it at The Nation or Color Lines does it,
That's not sufficient. That's just a start. We're the early warning system. But the problem is, in America today, once you get past the early warning system, suddenly all you're doing is getting the latest report on Britney Spears' concert tour.
Brenton, let me get a quick thought from you. We're going to go to the phones to close out this portion of our show. Brenton?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to agree. I mean, I don't want to beat up the media too much because they, you know, they pay my rent. But he's right. I mean, yeah. I think we saw a huge push on things like voter ID in 2012 during the presidential election. And, you know, the pushback from the right was, well, they're just doing this because they want to get Obama elected. Well, we know that that's not true, right? We're doing it because it's a civil rights situation. But, you know, right after Obama was elected, you saw a huge drop off, right, of media coverage on voter ID, not to mention the millions of other issues that needed to be touched, such as proof of citizenship laws, redistricting, gerrymandering. I mean, the general media touched none of that. So they almost kind of confirmed what the right put out there about this being all about Obama. But it's really not. It's really not. There's a lot of organizing going on right now. I mean, in Tennessee, one of the first states to have a voter ID law, a lot of people don't know this, but just last week or a couple of weeks ago, college students stormed into the state capitol during a hearing on the state's voter ID law, linked arms, got up and started singing, "We will not be moved." They had to be removed from the security office to get this in protest of the voter ID law. But you got, you know, no one covered that at all, except for a couple of local papers in Tennessee. But that's the kind of thing that that needs to get the same kind of elevation and spotlight as, you know, with as like if the Obama campaign comes out.
Well, I'm going to open the phone to get a quick last thought before we go. And we have to, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to conspire with the two of you over the coming weeks to make something happen. 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mark. So, you know, I agree that was a bad decision by the Supreme Court. I agree that money shouldn't be free speech. But you got to be fair. You can't be biased. So, fine. I think they should limit the money for whatever your political persuasion is. Now, you're saying it's wrong for the right wing, the conservatives and Republican Party to put all this money in. But it's also wrong that the left, maybe George Soros, and there's a lot of other people with money and a lot of corporate people that are liberal that put a lot of money in there, too.
You're getting an argument from me, Bruce. I mean, I don't disagree with that whatsoever. I think that's absolutely right. I said we got to, I think this that the idea of money controlling politics has to end, period. I have to go here in just a minute because we have to hit our next segment. But, gentlemen, will either one of you disagree with that?
No, let me jump in and just say, This is so very critical. I agree 100% with your caller. Look, other countries around the world, they don't let corporate money in, but they don't let liberal money in, they don't let conservative money in. They have publicly financed systems, and they spend a lot less on politics. Let me assure your caller of one thing. Big money in politics suppresses voter turnout and drives people away from the process. It is absolutely damaging because it pays for negative ads that cause people to give up on the process. And so the fact of the matter is we ought to get all the money out, create a system of public financing, and allow for a real public discourse as opposed to the absurd circumstance we have today. So we won't get there until we take charge of the corporations that ought not be ruling us, but in fact ought to be regulated by us.
We have to take a break here, but we're going out with the Blues Boys tunes by B.B. King when Martin Luther King was assassinated on this day. Jimi Hendrix, B.B. King, Buddy Guy, Joni Mitchell, Al Cooper, and many others got together for an all-night blues, folk, and rock session at the New Generation Club in New York after they heard that he was assassinated. So we're going to go out a little bit of that they played on that night together. I want to thank my friends John Nichols and Brenton Mock for being with us today to talk about McCutcheon. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break and come back. We're going to explore what this legacy of Martin Luther King means to all of us today. Stay with us.